Sixes lock all windows and doors. George DeWitt Lynch III, Roanoke, Virginia native, NCAA champion at North Carolina, three of his 12 NBA seasons with the 76ers, that special 2001 team. We're going to talk a lot about them. After that, various positions. You've been a head coach, an assistant coach, an administrator in the college game, a color analyst for the Charlotte Hornets on TV, married with three children, including Santana, who's a very good high school player. We'll talk about him. Did I miss anything?
That's it.
That's your life in, what, 45 seconds or so?
In 45 seconds, and every day I'm still dealing, trying to get Santana through high school.
Well, we're going to talk about that. I'm just curious about you. What are you doing now?
I work with a wealth management group, MAI Capital. We go around, talk to kids about NIL as early as high school now. You got to get out there, high school juniors. We were just on the campus of UCLA talking to the men's basketball team. And I'm trying to schedule an appointment to be able to talk to my fellow Tar Heels and the Duke Blue Devils.
Look at you. Do you like it?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. If you stay close to the game, you help guys, you share, things that decisions that you made financially. You're able to talk to them, and hopefully, with this new NIL, and recruiting and college kids having the opportunity to earn money at an early stage, it's a great opportunity to, stay close to the game and be able to help some young men.
Well, speaking of money, I have a phrase. I have a number of phrases, but one of them I actually trademarked, garbage into gold, and I came up with that. I don't remember the game specifically, but it came in a play that you did. You came up with an offensive rebound, and you put it back, and I just came up with garbage into gold. So I just want you to know it's trademarked. You're not going to ask me for any money or anything, are you?
Just send me some T-shirts.
Just send you some T-shirts? All right. I got you. So listen, we're going to talk a lot about the 2001 team because that was a special time. We'll talk about Allen Iverson, of course, but let's go back to your days growing up in Roanoke, Virginia, the first time you picked up a basketball. Do you remember?
Yes, I was probably about eight or nine. I used to go to the gym. Actually, my stepfather introduced me to basketball. He used to go play with guys every Sunday at the rec center. And I used to sit on the sideline and bounce the basketball. They wouldn't let me play for about 2 years. And then when I got old enough I was about 12, he let me run up and down, and that's where I found the love of playing the game.
So you're playing against older guys when you're 12, is that it?
Oh, yeah. My stepfather had to be in his 40s, and all his friends who played college basketball and high school legends around the area. It was a good time.
Yeah, I can imagine the learning curve was pretty steep.
Oh, yeah. Back then, they didn't take it easy on you.
Yeah, right. Do they necessarily do that now?
Yeah, I think the game has gotten a little softer now.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to talk about that because that 2001 team really made its mark being very physical. But what did your folks do for a living?
My mother, she took care of the elderly. She was always working in a retirement community. My father was a postal worker in the Roanoke area. And then my stepfather, he was a fireman.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Do you remember any dramatic stories from that?
Oh, yeah. He's come home a couple of times where he fell off the fire truck and, broke his ankle. One time he had to go into a burning barn and, got chicken whatever in his eye. So a couple of times, yeah, he's had some close calls, at least the stories we always heard. I don't know how much of it was tall tales, but right. I saw the wounds.
Now, your son Santana, He's a high school senior. He's got some game. What's the latest on him? Is he committed yet?
He hasn't committed. He has some offers. People are showing interest. He was kind of a late bloomer. He won the state championship last year at Myers Park here in Charlotte and wanted a bigger role as far as, you know, he was shooting a three about 47%. Mm. And I always told him, I said, Santana, you gotta do more than shoot the three ball. His first two games this year, he's had a double-double. His last game, which was Saturday, he had 23 points and 13 rebounds, six assists, and three steals. And after that, I couldn't say anything else.
Yeah. You sound like a proud father, as you should be.
Yes.
George, tell me, you know, it's always interesting, the chemistry between fathers and sons. You had an NBA career, a dozen seasons. You won a championship at North Carolina. You know what it takes to win. You know what it takes to become a really good player. What's the chemistry like as you try to manage your son, coach him, and get him to be as good as he can be?
Well, you know, I tried to coach my oldest, and he decided to play football, so I had to take a different approach with my youngest son. And I hear this all the time from former players, you know, being hands-on with your son. So with my youngest, I don't coach him, but we'll go to the gym. We go to the gym every morning at 6 a.m. before school, get shots up, we'll lift. And so, you know, I try not to be too hard. He's grown up around basketball. You know, Coach Larry Brown was at SMU. I was on the staff. So he's seen basketball coached at the highest level and taught, you know, the right way is the way we say it, or Larry Brown would say it. And, so it's been tough with the new way that these kids play. They go out, you know, AAU basketball is a lot of one-on-one, very little team-oriented. You know, he's a team player. He's an ultimate, you know, I think he would fit in on any team because he makes the extra pass. He plays the right way. He'll do the little things. Sometimes I find that he's not alpha enough. Being more assertive. But he's coming around. I think the new role with him on this team, he's asked to do more. He almost had a triple-double, you know, the other night. So just to see his development and to see him come around, it's been a pleasure. And I think taking the approach of understanding that he's not me, he's not going to grow up in my – he didn't grow up the way I grew up, so he plays the game totally different. I see some similarities where he's a team player. But it's going to be interesting. We'll see what happens. Hopefully someone will find interest in him. I think if he continues to play the way he's playing, his offers will come.
You say that you're trying to help him become more alpha. Can you do that, or do you have to be born that way?
You can continue to talk to him. I think, you know, accepting the role, and it has to come from his coach, his teammates. You know, they looking at him to be more offensive minded, whereas last year he didn't have that role. And hopefully he will enjoy the success, the clippings, the people patting him on the back, because he puts the work in. We're in the gym every morning at 6, and to see it pay off, I think hopefully that would encourage him. Oh yeah, I like this feeling, and the confidence will come behind that.
So you went from Roanoke to playing for North Carolina, and you played for the 1993 title team. It was the second of two for Coach Dean Smith. The other, of course, is 1982, the Michael Jordan shot and all of that. So let's relive the title game once again against Michigan. And I know you know where I'm going with this. Final seconds, 1-point game. Pat Sullivan at the line, makes the first, misses the second. Chris Webber rebound. Now, they miss a travel in the backcourt, but he dribbles into the front court, and he gets trapped, and he goes to call a timeout that his team did not have. Your thoughts when he did that?
Well, you missed a few seconds because Jalen took the ball out. So Pat missed the first one and made the second one. I think that's what it was. But we played them in Hawaii earlier that season. I can't remember if it was Thanksgiving or Christmas. And it was a tough game. I mean, they beat us at the buzzer because we missed the box out, tap in by one. So we knew that we could play with them. They were a talented team. If you ask me, they had more talent. I believe we were a better coach team.
Well, that was the Fab Five.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So, and it just came down to, you know, remembering the 4 years that, you know, being in the practice with Coach Dean Smith, paying attention to details. And what happened was Jalen, if you watch throughout the game, Jalen would always take the ball out. And Chris Webber was not even my assignment. I was guarding Jalen Rose. And early in the game, probably about 4 minutes left in the game, I told Derek Phelps, I said, next time Jalen Rose take the ball out, we're just going to do a two-man trap. And for some reason, I don't know if they ever worked on a press offense or, you know, the big taking it out. But Chris Webber had an affinity for dribbling the basketball. He wanted to be a guard. And growing up as a kid, I guarded little guys, you know, half my size. You know, I had good footwork. I could stay in front of smaller guards. So I knew in the open court that I could guard Chris Webber. On the block is a different story, but we were able to, you know, once I jumped the pass and he traveled. And then as he was going up the sideline, we were always trained, you know, once he crossed that half court line, trap. We didn't really get the trap at the half court line. He kept going to the baseline, to the corner, and he had no outlet. And, you know, I'm not for sure. I think, you know, I heard people saying timeout. I believe I would have called the timeout myself.
But I would assume you would have tried to make it your business to know your team didn't have any timeouts because you end up giving up technical.
There's another story behind that, too.
All right, so, go ahead. Lay it on me.
Coach Smith was always particular. I mean, he was stickler to details. So we in practice one day, and this had to be before the ACC tournament started, maybe January, we always did situations. So we in practice, and the situation that day was the first team, the starters, down by nine with maybe a minute and 30 seconds left. And we had to get back into the game. And the punishment was if the second team or the blue team, which is what they call them, pushed the lead to 10 or 11, you had to run sprints. If it was a stalemate, we didn't improve it, you had to run. So we had to either close the lead to one or win the game, not to run. So we making a comeback. There's a loose ball on the floor. And Donald Williams dives on the floor for a loose ball. And, you know, when and back then we practiced for 4 hours. It wasn't that hour and a half, 2 hour practice that these guys have now with them watching the clock. So we going through a practice, you know, right before the ACC tournament. And Donald Wimp dives on the floor. We might have been down at that point, maybe two. So this was a big point in the game where, you know, we had a chance to win the game. The win to practice. And so Donald dives on the floor for a loose ball, and as he's turning over, he calls a timeout. You would have thought that there was 20-some thousand people in the stands. Coach Smith, you know, chewed us up. He didn't swear, but he might as well. He should have swear. He chewed us out so bad that he put us on the end line. This was after a four. It felt like a four-hour practice. It probably wasn't, but it felt like one. He chewed us out, put us on the end line, and I swear we ran 100 sprints. For Donald Williams calling the timeout in practice. So after that, every player knew that don't call a timeout unless Dean Smith himself tells you to call the timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And for the game to end like that for Chris Webber, I think we might have been up already 2 or 3 points. They would have needed a miraculous shot, you know, with the clock running down. But it was just that, you know, when you go back and you look at the mini practices that we had, you know, as a senior myself, we had an older team as juniors with Montrezl Phelps, Reese, Donna Williams, that class. We weren't going to make too many mistakes to beat ourselves. They were going to have to beat us. And it came down to them making a mistake at the end. Mm-hmm, and cost. Mm-hmm. I don't think it cost them the game, but it helped us seal the game.
Well, listen, we got to leave that, and we got to talk a lot about 2001 because that's what people are really waiting to hear. And we're going to do that right after our halftime segment. So a couple of things here. I'm going to give you what we call our six-pack, and you have to choose between two things. And don't overthink it, George. I mean, it's
– yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like swinging the ball. You're just doing it, okay? You're just making the choice. So are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go.
Santa, baby, the season for our fresh cuts finally here with the sponsor of today's show, Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming have just launched their fifth-generation lawnmower to help you avoid yet another silent night in the bedroom. Take care of your special snowflake with Manscaped and watch your South Pole shine like never before. The fun doesn't stop there. Anybody with a relative with more scruff than the tree? Look no further than the Manscaped Beer Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Nose hair looking like icicles? Manscaped has your back there too with their Weed Whacker 2 Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer. Get the best stocking stuffer of all by going to manscaped.com. Use the code ZOO20 for 20% off plus free shipping. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code ZOO20. Say ho, ho, ho to a well-groomed mistletoe with Manscaped. Mrs. Claus will thank you. So, you ever get to a game and your view's nothing close to what you thought it would be? Listen, I get to buy seats now too, no freebies, so I'm teaming up with Game Time. They have got killer last-minute deals, flash deals. You could check out views from all seats in the venue, and they've got your back with the lowest price guarantee. Listen, if you find tickets for less in the same section and row, Game Time credits you 110% of the difference. They show your total up front. No surprises at checkout. Buying tickets takes 2 seconds, a couple of taps, and you're done. Philly, let's change the game. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the app, create an account, use the code ZOO for $20 off your first purchase. Remember, terms apply. Redeem the code ZOO, Z-O-O, for your $20 discount at gametime.co.
Philly cheesesteak or Philly soft pretzel?
Cheesesteak.
Center City or South Jersey?
Center City.
Here you go. Gritty, who's the Flyers mascot, or the Philly Fanatic, who's the Phillies mascot?
Philly Fanatic.
Meek Mill or Hall & Oates?
Meek Mill.
Dr. J throwback or Allen Iverson throwback?
AI.
Liberty Bell or the Rocky Steps?
The Rocky Steps.
All right. Now I'm going to go into my music library. I'm going to give you a handful of artists from my library, and you tell me if you have them or not. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The Black Keys.
Don't have.
Sturgill Simpson.
Don't have.
Flo Rida.
I have.
John Coltrane.
I might have one of his songs.
Okay. Esperanza Spalding.
Don't have.
Who's your go-to when you want to just kick back and relax?
I'm all with Jay-Z is my go-to.
Okay. Yeah. All right. What's your favorite album of his?
The Blueprint.
How about his wife? Do you like her? You like her music too?
I love her music. Yeah.
Why not? I love them both, and they're in my library, by the way. All right. Let's go back in the day, 2001. Let's start first with your signing. You signed as a free agent in 1998. That was the lockout year, so you didn't start playing really until, what, February? Yeah. I'm curious, what did Larry Brown tell you in regards to what kind of a team they were building around Allen Iverson?
You know what? You have to give – I have to give his daughter credit.
Larry Brown's daughter?
Yeah, Allie Brown and I was in a math class together, and she used to always say, you need to play for my dad, you need to play for my dad. And that year that I was a free agent during the lockout, it came down between George Karl in Milwaukee and the Philadelphia 76ers. Those were my two choices. A
couple of Carolina guys right there.
Yeah, yeah. And I chose Coach Brown, partly because Allie was in my ear every day. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, talking about I need to play for a dad. So, it came true. And then, you know, and I knew I couldn't go wrong with either guy, George Karl or Larry Brown, you know, with having the Carolina ties. But getting to Philly, it's funny. I was actually afraid, you know, my first preseason game, hearing the fans boo Scott Williams out the gym. And then they had ran Jerry Stackhouse out. They ran Eric Montrose out of town. And I was like, oh, man, I'm the fifth Carolina guy. They going to run me out of town. So, you know, playing those first two preseason games, I just wanted to be, you know, just do the little things to help a team win, hustle plays. And then as I watched the team that we put together, you know, Allen took 30-some shots a game. And I knew. Dean Smith always told me that I could be the best player on the floor without shooting the basketball. And I just tried to contribute and help in any way I could. Larry Brown knew that there wasn't a lot of shots available for guys.
Period. That's why, right.
That's why I think he assembled the team the way he did. And everybody accepted their role.
2001, let's zip ahead now. 2001, the team started 10-0. Was that enough to tell you that that club could be special?
Well, we knew we were special. I think the previous year we lost to the Pacers. Fans were throwing stuff on the floor. I remember that game. And we knew that deep down inside from where everybody came from, you know, I was coming from a situation in Vancouver where I thought I should have been playing, never got a chance to play. You know, Eric Snow came from Seattle. You know, everybody was, you know, coming from a situation where it was just about winning, and we all accepted it. And it turned out, you know, to be a fun group. You know, Allen was a blast to play with. People ask me who's the, you know, my favorite player, and I like to say AI was probably my favorite franchise, you know, so-called franchise player, because he came to play every night. He didn't take any days off. You knew what you were going to get, and he played his heart out. And, you know, for a guy, whether you're a reserve coming off the bench, you have to respect that and love that. You know, he you know, was no time management. You know, Coach Brown tried to give him 2 or 4 minute break in
hated
a game.
It. He hated it.
Yeah. So you have to respect that. He was a great leader for us. He made all of us better, and we made him better.
That team goes to 41-17 on the season. And it was at that point that Larry Brown, Billy King acquired Dikembe Mutombo from Atlanta, Tony Kukoc, Theo Ratliff, remember he had the wrist injury, and Nazi Muhammad go to the Hawks. 41-17. What are the players thinking at that point?
Well, I mean, we were all shocked because, you know, Theo, he was fun to play with. I mean, when he went up to block a shot, we were like, oh, we off to the races. And I later found out, I mean, he broke his wrist, and you know, that was questioned whether he was going to come back and play at all. And I think he was, you know, I'm not for sure. I don't know exactly what the words were, but, you know, I think they thought he wasn't going to be able to come back, and for us to get through the Eastern Finals and win it, we needed a center, and they made the trade for Dikembe.
That year, the team ends the season against a Chicago Bull team that had won only, this is post-Michael, of course, that had won only 14 games heading into the final game. It was at Wells Fargo Center. If the Sixers win, they have home court throughout the playoffs that includes the finals, and it was decided that the Sixers would rest Dikembe Mutombo and Allen Iverson, and the Sixers lost to a subpar Bulls team. Do you think things would have turned out differently had the Sixers had home court in the finals against the Lakers?
I think if we were a healthy team, it would have made a difference. But I think because so many guys were banged up, the injuries, if we were a healthy team and having home court advantage, I think it makes a difference. You know, the Lakers were too strong of a team, been through championship runs, for us to go in banged up the way we were and to pull that series off.
Talk about poor health in game four of the Eastern Conference semis against Toronto. In Toronto, you broke a bone in your left foot. How did you reconcile your fate with the fact that you wanted to compete?
Yeah, it was tough. I had a stress fracture the whole year. Well, not really the whole year, but halfway through, and I was playing on the stress fracture. You know, some games it hurt, some games it didn't. And it was just a freak step. I stepped on Alvin Williams' foot, and it broke. And I tried to come back. The screw that I had put in when surgery, it was too small. It didn't give me enough support, so I wasn't able to play. I tried to play, but it was too painful to play on. So I ended up having to.
You had some limited minutes in two of the finals games.
Well, I only played in one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I checked in, I tried to play, and it wasn't the same. You know, technology nowadays with these shoes and where they're able to tape your foot up, they probably could have taped me up and let me finish. But it was just, you know, me being hurt, I think Eric Snow was hurt, Aaron McKee was hurt, playing injured, and Mike Geiger was injured.
Even Mutombo was hurt, and you know Iverson had his share of stuff.
Yeah. We were banged up. And we all, and part of it was probably the way we all played. We gave it 100% every night, and, you know, probably didn't listen to ourselves when we should have had some time management.
I time management. Who heard of that phrase back then? The city, as you might recall, was crazy. And the thing that I always recall was the fact that the people who were in their cars had these flags that they would somehow attach to, you know, either side of their car. And it's no lie. It's like every third car had these flags flying. I remember the Philadelphia Daily News, I want to say for maybe 40 or 50 straight issues, the Sixers dominated the back sports page. I remember there was a picture, you talk about injuries, you know, the fife and drum portrait from the Revolutionary War, where they superimposed like Eric Snow and Aaron McKee and, you know, their faces on there. What do you recall from the way the city was acting back then?
It was great. I recall Pat Croce, you know, coming out of the ceiling.
Scaling water towers, I think, or bridges, or both.
Just doing everything to hype the crowd, the fans. The fans embraced us as players. Everywhere you went in the city, you know, majority of the time they were saying good things. But they weren't afraid to tell you when you were having a bad game. So, but it was a great time in Philly. A great run those 3 or 4 years. And it was a special moment and something I would never forget.
you know, in Philly, and I'm born and raised here, as a fan, you don't love a player unless you criticize the player. It's like you're a parent, and you know what I mean? And you're saying, don't do that, or come on, you could be better.
Right. Yeah, and I loved it because, you know, they kept you in check.
There you go.
Yeah, it was, to me, it was, I needed that motivation, that extra push, you know, especially when you're winning games and everybody's saying good things about you. You need someone to challenge you. You know, Larry Brown did it in practice, but every once in a while, you got it going down, going to the grocery store.
That team was the epitome, George, of blue collar. And I know the phrase is overused, but it was really the truth. And it was really a different game back then. I mean, teams are scoring 110, 115, 120. Back then, if you broke 100, it was a high-scoring game. The Sixers seemed to be comfortable playing in the 90s. They were physical. They were defensive-oriented team. Given all the rule changes now, which have really changed the game, and, you know, Larry Brown did not like the three-point shot. Now, you know, you're putting up 30, 40 a game as a team sometimes. How do you think that team would fare today?
Well, he liked it when someone was shooting a three that could shoot the three. He didn't like it if I was shooting it. But, I think we were a good enough team defensively. We played team basketball enough. Coach Brown was able to make adjustments if, you know, Allen would have had his way in today's game. And then us defensively, people didn't give us enough credit, but we had good individual defenders, but we were great team defenders. We knew where the mistake was going to be. We covered for each other. We knew each other's weaknesses. And that would have made us a great defensive team in today's game. You know, doing the little things, extra loose balls, the 50-50 balls. You know, guys getting triple doubles. It's triple double with 15 and 20 rebounds. That would have never happened against us. Mm-hmm. But the game has changed, and I think you know, we would have adjusted to the new way, and we could have been, you know, a top four, top five team in today's basketball. Mm.
Let's concentrate on Allen, because you made clear earlier your admiration for him, saying he was the best franchise type player you ever played with. And I'll use the word crazy, and you can interpret it any way you want. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen Allen do on a basketball floor?
There was an instance where anytime he played against Stephon Marbury, and we were in a game, and I seen Stephon drive to the hole. And Stephon was, you know, tough player, bully, street. He gave AI a shot to the chest. And it might have caught him a little high up on his throat and chin. And it pissed a lot of us off. And we were like, AI, run him off the screen. He said, nah. I got this. And he scored, he turned around and scored 20 straight points on Stephon Marbury. And that was the craziest thing I ever seen someone say, nah, I got this. Because sometimes you would get personal, you lose yourself and want to fight. He was like, nah, I've been through this, you know. And he took it on the chin and just got up, rubbed his shirt off, and was like, look, I'm about to get him the business, and y'all watch. And we enjoyed watching it. That was one of the craziest things that happened throughout that time with AI.
You ever hang with him off the floor?
Yeah, we you know what? In Philly, when we were home, we didn't hang out much. But on the road, we were a close group. We were a close-knit team. And very seldom did we go anywhere without four or five guys on the road.
Mm-hmm. What was it like just being out on the street with him, knowing that he was a rock star?
You know, he was a rock star, but he didn't like, okay, I'm going to go over here in VIP and y'all go over here. He hung out. If we were on the dance floor or somewhere where everybody else was, he was right there with us. He didn't, you know, he had his security with him, but it wasn't like, you know, he didn't communicate or have conversations with people. I mean, he made it, you know, he wanted to be right there with us and not put himself, you know, in the VIP section by himself.
Larry Hughes and I joked about this on an earlier podcast where Alan would be one of the last to get on the bus to go to the game, and he'd come out of the hotel, and so he didn't have to talk to anybody and just go straight on the bus. He had this thing where he had the phone. He would come out of the hotel all the time with a phone as if he was busy so no one would bother him. And then Larry Hughes joked, half the time it wasn't even his phone.
He probably didn't want the coaching staff or somebody saying, why are you late?
How did the players deal with all the drama between Coach Brown and Allen Iverson?
You know, we just figured it was part of it, you know, part of being the Sixers. I think because Allen was able to not let it carry over to his play, it was more accepting from his teammates, at least from me, because although him and Coach Brown had their problems, and it really wasn't problems, Coach Brown wanted AI to participate in practice so that he could put stuff in. And he didn't want to put stuff in for Allen. He wanted to put stuff in for guys like myself and Eric and Aaron and Tyrone here, you know. But AI was so gifted, he was like, all right, just tell me what I need to do. I'll do it. And for everybody else, we had to actually see it happening and go through it on both the defense and offensive end. But for the most part, we respected it, the fact that when the lights came on, Allen was ready to play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And speaking of practice, I know having attended many of them, Larry Brown was teaching like every 10 seconds. And I don't think Allen liked that, did he?
He did not like it at all. And you know, I was used to it because I played for Dean Smith and we stopped every second. But for Coach, for AI, if we had a 4-hour practice, he would have been fine as long as we didn't stop. We could have a 30-minute practice, and if we stopped, he was like, oh, this is killing me. You know, he wanted to keep going. He didn't want to hear anybody. He just wanted to play basketball as if he was in the park. And you know, an NBA game and a pickup game in the park is totally different.
Right, right. Do you watch the NBA today? Do you follow the Sixers today?
I do follow the Sixers. It was a little tough last year, just the way they were playing. I think now with Maxey and Joel Embiid and some of the role players, I think chemistry is there. There was always – last year was always, you know, how's Harden feeling, and it was that elephant in the room that I think, you know, hampered the way Coach Doc Rivers could coach the team and the way that the guys could fully develop as teammates, you know, because it was just, you know, James Harden. Maybe it wasn't James Harden's fault. It maybe could have been the media and all that. But when you're a team and you're trying to make that run, you know, if the guys, like that Philly group, the team in 2001, we were a special group. We were all older. We all knew what we were going to get. You know, Allen, you know, you knew he was going to give you 100%. And I think the question was James Harden giving the Sixers 100%?
Do you have reason to believe that he wasn't?
But it's just the way these guys play now. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, are you going to compete? Are you going to pick up at half court? You know, you're going to box out. You're going to lay it on the line. And sometimes, you know, the way the new NBA is, you question whether guys are landing on the line. Mm.
Can the Sixers win a title as they're currently constituted?
I think they're missing a few pieces.
Okay. If you were the GM from 30,000 feet, what would you do? And you don't have to mention any names, but what do you think that they could use to put them over the top?
I think they need a couple more spot-up knockdown shooters. Mm-hmm. That's defensive minded, that don't need, you know, 5 or 6 dribbles, a couple catch and shoot guys, you know, maybe a Klay Thompson. Who can see the floor? But so we'll see.
Mm-hmm. 3-and-D guys, as they call them today.
Exactly.
Bruce Bowen was one of the first 3-and-D guys, and that was around the time that you played. But now it's a common thing to be a 3-and-D guy.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of people don't understand when a guy need to dribble the ball 5 or 6 times, it takes away from the flow of the game. I think, you know, with Joel Embiid bouncing the ball 5 times, Maxey dribbling 5 times, you don't need other guys that need 5 or 6 dribbles to score the basketball.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up, and I'm going to say this. It's funny you would say that, and I remember watching Carolina in the Great Alaska Shootout in the mid-'80s. I was a broadcaster for Villanova, and I remember, and you could probably nod your head or in agreement, I remember they would run their sets, and the ball never hit the floor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we spent hours in practice passing and cutting,
Exactly. Exactly. Well, my friend, let's pass this way again. I do appreciate your time. It was great going through 2001. A lot of special memories for Sixers fans. I wish you all the best going forward, and thanks so much for joining us here on Fresh 24.
Thanks for having me. Go Sixers.
Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site, covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.